to the eighth case this morning, which is U.S. versus Parker.
I please the court, Mr. Yaden, Steve Eberhardt on behalf of Mr. Parker. Your Honors, there are two claims that Mr. Parker brings before the court. The first involves the applicability of the Fair Sentencing Act. I notice that the government has filed letters and asked that the panel review those, and I will just stand on saying that I wholeheartedly agree with the government in this situation that the court should reconsider the prior holdings of the court and find that the Fair Sentencing Act is applicable to Mr. Parker in regard to this case. Claim two, with regard to the claim that there should have been a dismissal of the felon in possession count, Mr. Parker raises really two arguments. The first is that there is no jurisdiction for the district court. Quite frankly, I have to acknowledge, after the government has cited and the court has decided the Foster case, holding that civil rights restoration is an affirmative defense, claims should have been made pre-trial or during trial, and the fact that the stipulation of the felony precluded relief in that specific case really causes problems to Mr. Parker's jurisdictional issue or claim. First blush, it makes it seem that maybe he has a better argument in a different day, in a different proceeding, in a different time. But I think the situation in this case makes it a little bit different than Foster. And the reason for that is because, as best as we could, Mr. Parker raised the issue in the district court that he was being treated differently by the government prosecutors. We cited to the district court or brought up to the district court three situations where the United States Attorney's Office had basically what I would submit to the court would be make a concession that there was a Buckmeyer problem in the case, and they had handled these different cases in a different way as Mr. Parker, but there was one difference. Mr. Parker only had Illinois convictions, prior convictions. He had an armed robbery and a burglary in Illinois. We brought up to the district court the case of Sharif Miller that's cited in our brief at page 14, and it's clear in that case that the prosecutor came in and told Judge Kendall, basically, we concede if there's a Buckmeyer problem and the facts are similar to the Buckmeyer case, that we cannot rely on the Illinois convictions as the predicate for the felon in possession. We cited also the case of Larry Burton. The government, taking a step ahead, says, well, there's a stipulation to the felony at the trial in Mr. Parker's case, just like there was in the Foster case, but what more of a stipulation could there be than entering into a plea agreement? This was before Judge Kaur. Even after entering into a plea agreement, when the government realized that there was a Buckmeyer problem, they dismissed that indictment because I submit to the court their concession was, if we have a Buckmeyer problem, we cannot use the Illinois conviction as a predicate for the felon in possession. The third case that was brought up to the district court was the Joe Hester case, cited also in our brief at page 15. When an indictment came down, and it's somewhat unclear from the records that we had, but I think one can glean from reading the transcript and the records, that an indictment came down charging a felon in possession based on an Illinois conviction. When that was brought up, the government basically, or a motion to dismiss was filed, and I submit to the court the government basically conceded saying, there's a Buckmeyer problem, you know what? We're not going to use the Illinois conviction. We're going to use the Georgia conviction. So the difference between Mr. Parker and Mr. Miller and Mr. Hester was there were only Illinois convictions with regard to Mr. Parker, but the government corrected their Buckmeyer error in those other two cases. With regard to Mr. Burton, the government had a drug case that they decided they could get a satisfactory sentence from, so they didn't need the felon, or they decided they didn't need the felon in possession based on an Illinois predicate. The government's justification in Mr. Parker's case is they take a step back and they say, well, this is all okay. There's no equal protection violation because we have the right to make our charging decisions. But I suggest, Your Honors, that it is more than just a charging decision between Mr. Parker and all these other individuals. Again, I have to emphasize, when they realized they had a Buckmeyer problem, they corrected those other errors, but they wouldn't in Mr. Parker's case, because if you get rid of the felon in possession based on an Illinois case, you get rid of the consecutive sentence. What the government does not address that I see in their brief is they make no comment on, well, why did we handle Mr. Miller differently? Why did we go in and tell Judge Kendall that we're basically conceding, that we can't use the Illinois conviction? They never explained why they went in before Judge Kaur and said, you know what, even though, Mr. Burton, you pled guilty, even though we have an agreement as to sentencing and the outcome of this case pursuant to a plea agreement, we're going to get rid of that. But the government doesn't tell us why, with regard to Mr. Parker's case, that decision was made. They also don't tell us why, in Mr. Hester's case, when a motion to dismiss was filed, they took a step back and reindicted using only the Georgia conviction. And I think the why, I submit the why to Your Honors, is, again, because Mr. LaShawn Parker only had Illinois convictions. They wouldn't correct the error because they knew that they would not have their consecutive sentence. Their position boils down to, again, we have the discretion to charge any way we want. But there's been no explanation of why they treated different people differently, and I submit to Your Honors, that is the equal protection violation that warrants the relief.
Thank you, Counsel. Jaden?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Ken Yadin for the United States. There are two issues in this case here I'd like to address. First of all, the Fair Sentencing Act of 2010 issue. At this point, it is the government's position that we do agree with Mr. Parker that the Fair Sentencing Act of 2010 should apply to him. And this is admittedly a change in our position from which I advanced in our brief. Following the Attorney General's directive to the government, we are now taking the position that the Fair Sentencing Act should apply to a defendant like Mr. Parker who committed the offense prior to the Act's enactment in August of 2010 but was sentenced afterwards. However, we do acknowledge this Court's decision in United States versus Fisher, and unless and until such time as this Court would change its decision in that case, it's our position that this Court must affirm the District Court's sentence as to count one of Mr. Parker, which is the conviction for possession with the intent to distribute crack cocaine. However, as the government notified the Court in our letter of yesterday, the Solicitor General has authorized us to ask the Court to reconsider its position in Fisher, but that is of course up to the Court. Unless there are any questions regarding the fair.
What does the government suggest we do with this case?
You know, at this point, the government would suggest that the Court of Appeals may either...
Now, what does the government suggest this court do with this case?
With this case, the court decides not to follow Fisher. The government would ask the court to reconsider its decision, Fisher, to reverse that decision.
Reverse Fisher?
Yes, Your Honor.
In this case, then, you'd want it remanded?
We ask it to be remanded, Your Honor. I would point out, Your Honor, of course, we have not briefed that in our papers. Unless there are any questions, I'll move on to the second issue. As to the second issue, the court correctly denied the defendant's motion to dismiss his felon in possession conviction as untimely under Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure 29. The district court was correct when it found that it did have jurisdiction over the felon in possession claim. First of all, a felon in possession crime, section 18 U.S.C. section 922G, is clearly a federal offense over which a district court has jurisdiction. And indeed, the defendant acknowledged as much in his jurisdictional statement in his brief filed with this court. Moreover, the court's recent decision in United States versus Foster would find that his stipulation at trial acted as a waiver of that claim, that his civil rights had been restored. Because he stipulated having a
firearm. Let me just sort of what's the effect of a pro se litigant filing a motion when represented by counsel? Does that even exist?
It probably doesn't, Your Honor. And I cannot recall whether the government objected before the district court, but I do know that the district court took the motion up, and then we did continue it on at that point. However, at all times, the government contested that the defendant should be able to prevail on that, and contested both that he should not because he had stipulated that offense, as well as he did not show that he had received such a letter. Now, understandably, the law has changed since that time. It looks to whether the letter was actually sent.
That Illinois is such a mess with regard to these letters. In fact, we had a case that they were stored in some back room. They don't even keep track of what they send.
Admittedly, that's likely that's the case. But
I'm sorry, that's not part of this case.
In this case, though, Mr. Parker did stipulate to that at trial, and he did it for whatever reason that he chose to do it for. I want to address the argument regarding the equal protection claim here. What Mr. Parker is really arguing is that he's a class of one here. And under those lines of cases, what he has to show is that the government acted with prosecuted him based on an invidious claim here. And that's simply not the case. These three cases that Mr. Parker has continually raised, the government made rational decisions based on the facts of those cases at the time. At bottom, what we have here is that Mr. Parker stipulated to having a prior offense. There was no invidious discrimination. Those cases were different cases, different sets of facts, different defendants. And we made those decisions, those cases based on those facts. I do want to also address one other point. There was the suggestion that we stuck by the 924G claim in order to get a consecutive sentence. Whether or not someone has a prior felony conviction has no effect on whether they're going to get whether they'll get a 922G conviction and then get a consecutive sentence. Consecutive sentence comes out of an 18 U.S.C. 924C claim, which was completely different. It was carrying a firearm in connection with the drug offense. So those are unrelated. Unless there are any further questions, I'll stand on my briefs and ask this court to do three things. First of all, to affirm the district court's decision based on the Fisher case. Secondly, to find that the district court correctly denied the defendant's motion to dismiss. And finally, a final issue, Your Honor, as to count three, the felon in possession claim. The district court sentenced the defendant to 122 months imprisonment, which is 2 months beyond the statutory maximum. We'd ask that this court act to modify that judgment without remanding it to the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You have 3 minutes, Mr. Everhart. And you took this case by appointment as well, did you not? Thank you very much for your fine representation of your client. Thank you. Case be taken under advisement. We move to the final case this morning.